oil disaster down there and promising to take care of the little people, or he called them small people. Take care of the small people. And the public was outraged. No, people didn't like being called small people. The shrimp captains and the waitresses and whoever he was referring to. They found that incredibly condescending, and they were, the press was all over it. Of course, up here we talk about small businesses, but evidently to be called a small person isn't quite the same as being called a small business. Everybody matters. Nobody is small. Nobody is unimportant. And today's text is a case in point. And it is obviously a story about power. It's about movers and shakers in history, kings and generals and prophets. What's so not so obvious in the story I'm about to read is that it also is about the little people. It is about the small people who actually make things happen. And they have a different kind of power. And it's an interesting story to read today on the 4th of July, on Independence Day. So we're going to go to 2 Kings, and I'll get the page number for you in just a minute. 2 Kings, chapter 15, page 334, if you'd like to look along. May or may not be a story that's familiar to you. 2 Kings 15, beginning at verse 1. This is an Old Testament story in the times of kings and prophets. In the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Azariah, the son of Amaziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 16 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem.
You want a chapter 5.
I want a chapter 15. 5. You know, I knew I was dangerous using the Pew Bible instead of my own because it's small print. Sorry. This will be a much better story because I don't know anything about the other story. Chapter 5. Ah, here we go. Naaman. That's the name I was looking for. Naaman. Does anybody know the story of Naaman? Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. Now the Syrians, on one of their raids, had carried off a little maid, from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said to her mistress one day, "Would that my lord were the prophet who is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his lord, "Thus and so spoke the maiden from the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 10,000 shekels of gold, and 10 festal garments, and he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, quote, "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent to you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy." And when the king of Israel read the letter, he read, that means tore his clothes, and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Only consider and see how he is seeking to quarrel with me." But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, he said to the king, saying, "Why have you rent your clothes? Let him come now to me, that he may know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots, and he halted at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean." But Naaman was angry, and he went away, saying, "Behold, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper? Are not Abana and Pharphar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned around and went away in a rage. But his servants came near and said to him, My father, if the prophet had commanded you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much rather than when he says to you, Wash and be clean? So he went down and dipped himself seven times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored, like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. You know, there are a lot of movers and shakers in that story. We got Naaman, the great general. We got two kings, the king of Syria and the king of Israel. We got a prophet named Elisha. All men with big names in the history books. Big men in the eyes of the world. But Naaman's healing would never have happened if it weren't for the little people. Did you like that? The little maid, the little messenger. The little servants. Naaman may be a big deal, but he also has a big problem. They call it leprosy in this translation. It could have been any number of skin diseases. Of course, in those days, if you had a skin disease, you were in big trouble. Because people thought they'd catch it. Sometimes they did. Of all physical ailments, a skin disease was the one hardest to hide. And it makes Naaman the mighty warrior strangely vulnerable. Barbara Brown Taylor retells this story and explores what the great general must have felt like with the simplest of everyday encounters when his success and his fame and his power meant very little before this incredible, devastating disease. No one would want to shake his hand. No one would want to stare at him too long. No one would want to sit next to him at a table. How he amassed all that power and authority must have happened before the skin disease started showing up, and obviously he must be a very good general for them to even be willing to keep him around. And while he may have all the earthly power, he's still pretty much an outcast. Walter Brueggemann says this about the secret life of the mighty name, and he says, you know, he was really an invisible nobody. He must have wept in the night, even while he put on a brave face in public. And, you know, we don't often give credit to the people that we read about in the news and the people who have all kinds of power and might. They're still people. And at the end of the day, they still go home. And they have to look at themselves in the mirror. And Naaman didn't like what he saw. And I'm sure his wife didn't like it either. In those days to be a leper, in those days to have those kinds of pussing and oozing wounds, think about it. He was right on the edge of having to move out into the desert. And it was only the favors that he had curried and the reputation that he had amassed that kept him in the game at home. So he walks and talks with kings, and he's pretty impressive, and surely he has access to the best health care. He would get a private room with a view, right? Everything can be bought, after all, right, when you live on top of the world, right? Well, not so much. So the king of Syria, Naaman's boss, agrees to go along with this plan. And did you catch the plan? I love the way it works. King of Syria sends out general, takes over parts of what? Israel. Captures girl, makes her a slave, comes to work at Naaman's house. Little maid says, you know, if you were in Israel, we could take care of this problem. And he's desperate enough that he's willing to go back to the country he was just in the midst of conquering to look for some help. So he goes to the boss, he goes to the king of Syria, and he says, okay, I'll send a letter. We've heard that called healing on demand by royal memo. Heal him or else. Now the king of Israel gets this letter. Did you notice? He thinks it's all a setup. The king of Israel gets this letter from the conquering king, says, heal my general. And he's thinking, oh no, I can't heal anybody. I'm just king of Israel. He's smart enough to know what he can and can't do. So he thinks it's another excuse to come in and bash them all again. Luckily, Elijah has some ears in the castle. You know, there's all these ears everywhere. There are ears in the White House, there are ears in the castle. There are all these. So luckily, Elijah has an ear in the castle, an ear in the palace, and he says, oh, well, send him over to me. So just don't, in the midst of all this, don't forget the little maid. Undoubtedly a captive, a pawn in this great conflict, had some memory of Elijah and what Elisha could do, some kind of, probably never met him, but heard the stories. It's amazing how people without power have to work between the lines to get stuff done. They have to work behind the scenes. And this little girl, this little maid, I don't know how old she is, but she's young, is able to start these wheels moving. She works outside the system in her own little way. But Naaman arrives, right? Goes to the king, goes to Elisha. And did you notice what happens to Naaman when he arrives? He doesn't even get to go in the house. He's standing on the doorstep of the house. He's left standing outside. It's as if Colin Powell comes to visit you and you tell him to wait in the car. I mean, you gotta picture that. You don't do that. So he gets all riled up. He's all out of joy. He's already mad. You don't keep a general sitting in his chariot. And he's sitting there, and he's stewing, and just, you know, shows you some things haven't changed. How long have you ever sat in the doctor's office waiting to be seen? I mean, what's your record? Mine's about an hour and a half. I don't know why I didn't leave. So he's sitting there, and he's just, his blood's starting to boil, and he's used to privilege, and he's really getting all worked up. And then finally what happens? Elijah sends another little person out. Elijah doesn't even come out. Sends his messenger out and says, my master says, go take a bath. Go wash in the river. Now, anyway, to be fair, doesn't like the prescription. And you've gone to the doctor and you haven't liked the prescription either. You know, I go to the doctor, he says, lose weight. Go cure all your problems, right? You know, or you know, eat less red meat, or cut down on your cholesterol, or whatever it is, you know. Exercise after dinner. It's just one of those kind of prescriptions, okay? This is not like chemo or, you know, radiation or massive surgery. This is like just go wash. And that is way too lowly for Naaman. And didn't you love how he put it? Where was it? It's worth looking at again. Behold, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Thought he would do some magic. Fortunately, the little people, the servants, they get it. And aren't they smart that they can reframe this whole thing to get him to do it anyway? And they say, you know, Naaman, general, the one who could like cut off my head if he doesn't like what I'm saying, right? Slave. If he said to do something really hard, you'd be all over it. So they're almost like, pretend this is hard and go do it. They're almost daring him. If you read it subtly, they are almost daring their boss to try this folk remedy. Because that's how we see it. This is some kind of folk remedy. This is kind of some kind of mumbo jumbo. This can't be the real thing. But the servants know that the little things are important and that the lowly things can make a difference. And luckily, to make this story grand, Naaman does swallow some of his pride. And he goes and washes in the Jordan, has himself a nice little dip 7 times, and he is cured. And I don't read to you the rest of the story. You can go on and read it. It's actually quite interesting. We can hope that his heart is humbled a bit. But you have to remember that nobody remembers in this story to thank the little people. Nobody. The Take a look at our nation. In our nation, we are known for our power and our might. Even now, even in the midst of recession, even in these economic times, our nation still in the world is perceived as having power and might. Not always well-loved, but still respected. And wouldn't we do well to listen to the little people? The shrimp boat captains in the Gulf, the small business owners in Maine, school principals in Harlem, you can go on with the list. They know stuff. We know stuff. They know their own experience. And people that are down in the trenches know what works. And they know what works, quote, outside the system. They know the folk remedies. They know what's happening on the ground. And in some cases, they know God. And they'll share what they have. Our nation, so powerful and so mighty, yet still so in need of help. And it won't come just from the big guys. Won't come just from the big guns. The presidents, the generals, the congressmen. It will come from people like you and I. I know you probably don't like to be called a little person. But it is these people that can make a huge difference in holding it all together. That in the midst of our own society and our own nation's health, we do make a difference. So often we think it's all about the movers and the shakers. It's all about the people who make the news. It's all about the people who are in Newsweek or whatever, the Washington Post, but it just isn't so. Barbara Brown Taylor says this. She goes, "You may never hear it again on a 4th of July weekend. But maybe the next time you are saying your prayers for this great shaky nation of ours, you will remember that great leprous man, Naaman, whose wealth and power turned out to be useless in his search for health, and who was ready to trade it all in when God surprised him with a cheap cure that made him truly free." Sometimes we look for the most difficult thing, but at the end of the day, it's the simple things, the small things, the things that we can do, believe it or not, will make a difference. I don't know about you and I, looking at my own life, but I've done what Naaman did over and over. I've done the heavy miles, but I skipped the simple steps. I looked for the big and mighty thing and forgot to do the little thing because it just didn't seem all that important. You know, 7 years of higher education to learn about God and be able to stand here, but not 20 minutes in quiet prayer. You know? We want the big, hard stuff. But it's that daily, small thing. Too simple to bother with. Yeah, too short on time. Or even relationships, whether it's with God or somebody else. Oh, we want to do the big things. The big anniversaries, you know? The big events, the big weddings, you know? I am a pastor. I do a lot of weddings. Don't ever talk to pastors about weddings. They are some of the most cynical people when it comes to weddings you'll ever meet. Because they spend these couples will spend tens of thousands of dollars on this one day, and they have made no investment in the day after. And they're divorced in 3 years. And put things on the little things. Like getting to know each other. Learning how to communicate. Learning how to argue and resolve. Oh, but they have a good way. It's the little things. If you put all your energy into the big events, you'll be in trouble soon. It's the ongoing little things, the things that seem too simple to be significant, that keep relationships growing and that provide that context for big things to happen. So whether it's relationships, our country, our personal lives with God. Oh, I mean, it seems too simple to go to church Sunday after Sunday. You don't need to climb big mountains to do this. We're here at the foot of the mountain. We simply, you know, you don't have to fast for 40 days or trek across the continent on your knees. You just kind of have to wake up in the morning and get in your car and come home. Seems too simple to really be of much value. And yet it is. And then we gather here or in another church someplace else, and we gather with companions, we sing some songs, we pray some prayers, we listen to some old stories, we have some silence, we break some bread. Simple stuff. I wonder if Nathan would have been bothered with that. And sometimes we wonder why we bother. But it was the simple things that healed Nathan. And I do believe that it is some of those simple things that heal our lives. The road to life in all its fullness is made up of little steps. Most of them seeming so insignificant as to seem irrelevant when we think about our big destination. A dip in some ordinary water, listening to some old stories, spending time in quiet, sharing bread and wine. And yet, those are the things that bring us healing. Whether it's our lives with God, our relationships with others, our country. Let us not focus so much on those big, big things that we forget that it's putting one foot in front of the other, turning once more again to our Lord, focusing in on those little things that so often make us available to the grace of God. I do have a song for us to sing, and I want you to look at it first. It's on page 574. Again, just a little song. It's from 2 Chronicles, another Old Testament passage. If my people's hearts are humbled, if they pray and seek my face, if they turn away from evil, I will not withhold my grace. I will hear their prayers from heaven. I will pardon every sin. If my people's hearts are humbled, I will surely heal their land. Then my eyes will see their sorrow. Then my ears will hear their plea. If my people's hearts are humbled, I will set their nation free. If my people's hearts are humbled, if they pray and seek my face, if they turn away from evil, I will not withhold my grace. Let this be a prayer this morning. Let this be a prayer this morning as we come to the table.